Hi, folks. Welcome to A Different Direction. We cover stories of the strange, document the weird, stuff like that. I'm Dave.
I'm Disco Bounty.
And today we are talking about the Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., Episode 11, Deep in the Heart of Dixie.
Interesting choice of title.
What do you mean?
Just saying. The title.
I'm curious what your thoughts are. It seems like you have thoughts.
Just, you know, it's very wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
It is, yes.
But that's kind of Dixie, I guess.
Yes.
As a character. Also, I hate this episode coming out of nowhere. All right, sorry, we haven't even gotten into... I'm sorry. I keep trying to like Dixie, and I don't. And now here we are in a Dixie episode.
I really don't understand what it is that you have against Dixie.
I just don't want her to be with Briscoe.
Okay. Fair. And we'll get into that. But first, if you want to contact us, you can do that on Twitter at DiffDirectionPod. You can also email us at differentdirection@tgifrk.com. We don't have any messages from the freaks on the message board today, but I did want to read a thing I mentioned last week. I had said that there was... So in last week's episode, there was the thing with the stampede.
Where they hide under the wagon.
Right. Yeah. So there's a section in Bruce Campbell's autobiography that I remember during that, but I forgot to look it up. And so I found it. He was talking about how, like, there were stunt people, obviously, for a lot of the stunts on this show, but, like, sometimes you need close-up stuff, so he would have to do the actual stunts. And, like, he was like, you know, the stunt coordinators were great. They were very careful. Everything, you know, was fantastic. Sometimes stuff still goes wrong with stunts. So this is one that he mentioned. One scene called for me to be lashed in the middle of the street with the heroine of the week. As the action unfolded, the idea was for us to narrowly escape a stampede of cattle by rolling under the safety of a nearby wagon. As the actress and I rolled under the wagon, the cattle were supposed to be herded around in a safe manner. But as the cameras rolled, a logjam formed, and cattle began to panic. Dozens of them began piling up behind the wagon, and it lurched forward. Everyone involved had to think fast. The actress wrapped her body around the front axle of the wagon. I spun around on my back and jammed my boots against the back axle. I figured if I was going to be trampled, I wanted to see it coming. Fortunately, with the aid of the wranglers, the herd was soon dispersed and the danger was over. Interestingly, even though the cameraman abandoned his post, the camera stayed straight enough to capture the shot in all of its raw glory, and the footage appears in the episode. So, yeah, because if you remember...
Everyone, like, almost died. We kept it in!
I mean, that's what you do. It's like, when stunt people get injured, usually that's the stunt you use. Like, if you have multiple takes, you use the one where the guy got hurt, partly out of respect for the stunt person actually, like, taking the real injury, and partly because a lot of times that's the one that looks the most real, because it is.
This is very gruesome.
Yeah.
Just like this episode.
Because I remember, like, I had forgotten about it when we were watching, but I remembered later when we were talking about it, but, it, like, in that scene, the, like, it actually, the wagon kind of collapses to the side a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I feel like it wasn't supposed to collapse like that.
Oh, yeah. I think you even said something like that when we were watching it.
Oh, maybe. I just feel like, I remember it being like, that doesn't look like a stunt, like a prop break. It feels like it broke. It feels like the prop broke, not the prop was supposed to break.
It felt like everyone was in danger. Real danger.
So anyway, this episode, two writers on this one. We have Brad Kern, who amusingly, I realized, hasn't actually written an episode yet, even though in the last episode, they were the racer, like the two racers were named after Brad Kern. Brad Kern's one of the people who was named after for writing his script so quickly. He doesn't have a credit as the writer on any episodes before this.
Interesting. Okay.
Before this, he has written a bunch of episodes of the show Remington Steele. He went on to write some episodes of Charmed, NCIS. There's a new Beauty and the Beast show, I guess, that I wasn't aware of. Wrote some of that. The other writer, John Worth, also doesn't have any credits on this, but he also wrote a bunch of Remington Steele, along with some of Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Isn't that one season?
I think it's two. I looked into it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's actually two.
Okay.
Also, was the creator of the show Woo Assassins.
Woo!
Which I don't know a lot about, but it looks rad. The director is Joe Napolitano, who also has not directed an episode of this, but, you know, had done like 12 episodes of Quantum Leap. And
did he work on Remington Steele?
Did not work on Remington Steele. Okay. No.
That sounds like a razor and a porn.
Yes. He did direct the episode Still I Rise of Freaky Links. Yep. And
wait, which one's Still I Rise?
That's the one with the dead rapper.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And the wax golem. Also directed some Earth 2 and the show Viper.
Is that the like Pamela Anderson spy show?
No.
That's VIP.
That's VIP. Viper is the show about, that's like, what if Knight Rider was an ad for the Dodge Viper?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So Saints Row 2.
Yeah.
It could be any Saints Row, even though there's no brand names in those games.
Right. I will say Earth 2, definitely high on my list of series to do on this show. Maybe, might take a little while, though, because I think it's one of the ones that has, like, a full season.
Is that
season.
Where they go in Battlestar Galactica? Looking for Earth 2? Is that where they go in that other show, The 100?
That's Earth 1.
Where did... Okay, hold on. How many more shows can I come up with? Just so many. Is that where they are in Sesame Street?
Yes, correct. You finally nailed it. All right, so time for us to spoil it. So I guess I'll give my recap unless you've got one.
No, this show either has a lot of action or too much plot.
Uh-huh. This one's a lot of plot.
This one's so much plot. There is just so much to uncover. So yeah. Please let us get on with this.
Okay.
That sounds bad. So let's hear what happens.
Okay. So Socrates has a new crush. It's very exciting. I've got high hopes. I'm sure it's going to work out well. As long as he can get over being shy, that's definitely the only possible problem here. Speaking of dating, Dixie's here. Look, it's Dixie. She's being kidnapped. There's a big old shootout. Briscoe just happens to be there tries to stop it, but she's gone. Don't know what happened. She's just gone. Now Briscoe's just happily listening to a wax cylinder record that he's never heard of, I guess, despite being a guy who's really like trying to find the next big thing and has been around for like 15 years. He's never heard of a wax cylinder before, and he's just finding out about it now. Then turns out Dixie heard one of these. It was a Civil War general making a deal with John Bly. And so they're going to use that in a court case, but they got to get Dixie and the cylinder to the courtroom. There's also a assassin after her. Winston Smiles, Sark from Tron, is after them. Didn't work out the first time, so he's mad and he poisons one of his men with putting some cyanide in his pheasant. So, one thing. Briscoe, not allowed to go after Dixie, and he does. Bowler, hired to go after Dixie, and he does. Briscoe gets Dixie first. They go through the woods to try and avoid Winston Smiles. Bowler finds him instead. Bowler's like, I ain't worried about Smiles, and is immediately caught by Smiles. But luckily, Briscoe's there to get her away, and they make it to a train, and they escape. And then there is some very suggestive train imagery. Night passes, and they're caught by Smiles, who manages to get the train to stop by hacking, by doing some phone freaking on the telegraph lines. Briscoe isn't the only one with some suggestive train imagery. Socrates has some too. with the secretary, the boss's secretary. This is the lady he's got a crush on. I'm real happy for him. It's going to go well, and I'm excited for this new relationship. It's got a big future ahead of it. Meanwhile, back to the train, Smiles has caught Dixie and Briscoe, and they stop the train, and then they tie Briscoe to the tracks in the train, and they're gonna use the train to pull Briscoe apart if Dixie doesn't talk. And then they drive the train long enough that they definitely absolutely rip Briscoe into all kinds of pieces. But Dixie rescues him, and he's fine. Totally fine. Definitely didn't get super ripped apart. They manage to escape again on the train, but they're like, can't trust the train. Let's get to that mission. Get that cylinder. It's at a mission because Dixie has a very complicated backstory. It will get spat at us in about 12 seconds, but it has to do with this mission. They get it, but Smiles and his people are already there. And Bowler is very religious, and that helps somehow. And they manage to get the cylinder and get away from Smiles and his men, but not for long, because back at the Westfield Club, Smiles is there again, and gives some poisoned dinner to the boss's secretary. What? I definitely didn't see this coming. How could this possibly have been a double cross? I had high hopes for Socrates and his love life here, but no, she was using him to get information and get the cylinder, and they almost poison Dixie, but she's like, pheasant smells funny, and then she's fine. She managed a big old fight between her and the secretary. It's a fight between Briscoe and the Smiles, who has a cuckoo clock bomb. Cuckoo clock bomb. I want to say that again. He has a cuckoo clock bomb. Everyone but Smiles manages to escape the Westerfield Club, but the Westerfield Club does not escape. Completely wrecked. But one thing that's not wrecked, Bowler and Briscoe, definitely gonna partner up. Dixie and Briscoe, also definitely gonna partner up. Different way. They're both, but there's a lot of partnering up happening here. The end? The end. I think that's it. Oh, I didn't mention, somewhere in there, we find out they're really, Dixie got her face on a coin in Mexico, and there's a traveling troupe of Mexican singers that recognize her as the Lady of Liberty of Jalisco. Forgot to mention that bit. Anyway, that's it, I think. Did I miss any major plot points you can think of?
Did you talk about how the Attorney General showed up to hire Bowler?
Oh, yeah. That guy was here.
Oh, yeah, that guy was here.
Well, I mean, I said Bowler was hired. I didn't say it was the Attorney General guy.
But not just from just anyone, right?
Yeah, it's...
And then he gets that badge.
Yeah, he's officially a U.S. Marshal for a little while. Yes, that did happen. You're right. I did miss that part. Forgot that guy's name.
U.S. Attorney Breakstone.
Breakstone, yes, of course, right. I think that's everything.
He's just one of many of too many characters in this episode.
There's a lot of characters.
There's so many.
Yeah.
I just stopped taking notes after a while. I'm just like, if you're going to throw all this at me, I know this is one season.
Right. Like, the first character I wrote down was General Warrington Hyde, assuming he's going to show up in this. We're going to definitely meet Warrington Hyde. So it's important that I remember that name. He never shows up. It's like, there's so many people I never wrote down Warrington Hyde. I mean, we never met Warrington Hyde. I didn't write down most of the others.
Yep. Also, Winston Smiles. Mm-hmm. Great name.
Great name. Great voice. Great character. Dead.
Dead. Great smile. I actually don't think that was true.
No, he doesn't really smile much. I don't feel like this actor smiles much in things, and whenever he does, it's evil. It's
well,
evil
that that goes great with this character. Yeah. Who is clearly very much evil.
Yep, very much. You know, it's funny. I feel like is one of the other things this guy is in is the movie Time Bandits, which is a really bizarre movie, and the judge from the one that's about the court case. The episode about that was about the court case. I forget the name of the episode, but the one that was like two episodes ago
mm-hmm.
was also in Time Bandits. It's a really, like, weird and kind of obscure movie, but both of them were in that movie.
What I think is stranger is that you know this obscure movie, and then you're like, both of those people.
Well, no.
In this otherwise obscure TV show.
So, I only know that they're both in it because of IMDb, because of looking them up. Not because I remember them being in it.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that hits a little differently. Normally, you're just like, that's the judge from Ghostbusters 2.
I mean, look, I recognize both of these guys from different things. I didn't know they were both in Time Bandits. I've only seen Time Bandits, like, once. I don't really remember a lot about it.
I recognize people, too, sometimes. I find out that I don't recognize them at all. I'm like, yeah. Who's that face? Oh, it's no one I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a face on out there.
Yeah. It's one of the, there's a lot of people where you're like, I definitely know them. It's like, well, they were in 1,000 things once. I probably do know them, but also I wouldn't ever be able to tell you it was them from that thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wasn't even saying that. I was just saying that I was bad at faces.
Well.
Okay. So who else? What else is important? Who's the person that shows the talking machine to Briscoe?
I think he...
That scene is very strange to me. It's just here we are in the saloon doing this.
Yeah.
You know about this because you're getting bly, right?
Yeah. It's...
Is he also... I feel like he's also a government official, but it's different than the government official that's hiring Bowler.
I thought he was like... I almost thought he was like another robber baron.
Yeah, I thought he was
he must,
too.
Yeah, he must be because so Miss Avnet is his secretary, and Socrates refers to Miss Avnet as his boss's secretary. He works for the robber barons. This guy must be one of the robber barons.
There's so many of them.
There's so many, because I think it's almost like they assume nobody's paying attention to who the robber barons are, so we'll just get, like, an older actor to play one of them when we need it. Like,
I mean, okay, to be fair, I just don't pay attention to the robber barons. It could be one of them from the original million that they showed earlier in the series.
It could be. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't.
I'm telling you, I'm showing up and I'm caring for all the things that I care about on the show, which is not Dixie Cousins.
Yes.
I like her as she is fun and adventurous. Mm-hmm. I'm all for Briscoe and Dixie having fun adventures together.
Yes.
But we cannot deny the romance we saw last week with Annie, and it was beautiful. And then Briscoe's here this week saying the exact same things he just said to Annie.
Yeah.
Come on, Briscoe. See, I don't think this is Briscoe. This is the fault of the show. This is the show's fault.
Yeah.
Briscoe makes no decisions.
Well, right.
They write, and I don't buy this with Dixie.
Mm-hmm.
I buy this as like a dalliance. And even he is like, I'm not ready to be committed. That's not what he told Annie. He's like, I'm coming back home to you, Annie.
That's a perfect Briscoe impression. I like that a lot. That was really impressive.
My disco impression. That's the evil version.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, we said it last week, and I'll say it again now. I agree. The romance scenes, any of the romantic scenes with Dixie, don't feel real. They
But I like her character. Her character is fun. And I love, like, Briscoe goes to, like, find her in that other place where she's wearing the wig.
Yeah.
And is seemingly underground.
Right. Because she's in hiding. Because she's been, like, hidden by the government. And the way they're hiding her is by putting her in a dark wig and making her still be a lounge singer in front of a whole bunch of people. With no
there
guards.
There were four people, and it was down some stairs. No one goes there.
Yeah, there were zero guards. Briscoe walks up and just picks her up and carries her away. What was the problem with Cheers?
That it was downstairs, and no one can find it. And no one wants to walk downstairs.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Nobody ever goes downstairs in bars.
No one goes downstairs.
Oh, I see.
I haven't left my apartment since I moved in. Just went up once. Haven't been back down.
Right. I forgot about that.
So, I don't even remember the point I was making now. Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think it was about Dixie and how you like how she could do adventures and stuff, and then
sure. I wasn't just on a tangent about stairs.
Right.
All right. Anyways.
But what I was going to say is like I'm with you. I don't want Dixie to be the romantic interest of Briscoe. I want a reboot of this show, and I want to watch the adventures of Dixie Cousins Jr.
Okay.
Like, that's what I want. I want, I want to see Dixie imparting some important life lessons to the daughter she raised on the road. Maybe she picked up some pointers from Briscoe, but it's not Briscoe's kid.
Okay, it's but it can't be kid. Western.
I mean, it would be like early 1900s, so.
So it'd be Downton Abbey.
Well, I mean, it's the same time frame, but it would be more like an Around the World in 80 Days kind of show.
Do you need a hot air balloon for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or a rocket? Or an orb-powered rocket?
Did you ever think about how this is a very, like, Adam's Family scene that happens later on with the train pulling?
Oh.
Because you're on the rack, and it's just like,
mm-hmm.
Where are you now, Wickwire? Where are you now?
Yeah. Yeah, if Wickwire's there, just be like, that. That's
more.
Just, yeah, more.
I love this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mon ami.
Wonderful. I will say, I really like when U.S. Attorney Breakstone shows up and he's, like, trying to get Bowler's attention because he wants to, like, hire him to find Dixie. And he's like, Lord Bowler, a.k.a. Pierre Lamont, a.k.a. Irvin Paltz, a.k.a. Joe Echohawk. It's like, that's a lot of names.
It's a lot of bowler.
It's a lot of bowler. It's a lot of bowler. And, you know, when he says that, and I was like, you know, there's an aspect of Bowler's look that I've always thought was kind of odd, which is he has these, like, beaded, designs on his shoulders that feel very much like a Native American look.
Mm-hmm.
And when he calls him Joe Echohawk, I was like, that sounds like a name of a Native American person in a show like this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm saying that as like, it seems like a name you would use for a Native American person in a show like this. I don't know if it sounds like an accurate name for a Native American person.
No.
I'm not stating that at all. It might be, it might not be. I don't know, but my assumption.
It definitely felt like they were signaling something.
Yeah.
But, and they actually follow up with that later.
Yes.
And is that what you were going to bring up?
That's exactly it. I was like, later, Bowler specifically mentions being part Cherokee. And I was like, okay. Now a lot of this makes kind of sense that like it seemed odd before. Now I'm like, okay, cool. Bowler's part Cherokee.
I just figured anything that Lord Bowler could be wearing, he has stolen quite possibly.
Sure. But he's made that choice. Like there's a reason he's wearing that hat, right? Which tells me there's a reason he's wearing this jacket.
He could be anyone. He's already got three other names.
Right. But he specifically says that he's part Cherokee later. And I'm like, so that tells me, I bet his real name Is Joe Echo Hawk?
How do you know? That could just be one.
I don't.
That could just be one of many. That's just, he only has four names.
It could just be a name he chose for the same reason he chose that jacket. It makes sense for him.
Look, there are no hackers to follow you around now.
It's true. I'm just saying.
Even though you were talking about those phone freaks.
They're definitely phone freaking, I'm telling you. Like, because they tap into the telegraph lines to send a fake message to stop a train. They're phone freaking.
Okay. I don't understand what Smiles says to do that.
Uh-huh.
Because he asks if they know how to do that, and they're like, no.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like, go do that now.
I think he's made it okay. A thing I just sort of brushed past in my recap, but we should mention.
We're going to brush past and go over things in a weird. I think this episode's a lot.
Yeah, that's the point of giving the recap.
Yeah.
So, in the first attempt to kidnap Dixie, which fails, Smiles is so upset that he ends up killing one of his henchmen, Simpkins. I want to point out, Simpkins being, like, David Simpkins, the writer of the previous episode and of and former executive producer of Freaky Links. So he poisons Simpkins for failing with his plan. Simpkins is the one that gets shot in the leg by Briscoe. So Simpkins is killed for failing in the kidnapping attempt. So I think when he has the stuff to go tap into the telegraph lines,
mm-hmm.
and he gives it to the guy, and the guy doesn't know how to do it, he's still going to do it. He's going to figure it out, because he knows if he doesn't, he's dead.
Okay.
Not saying it's easy, but it's just like, well, I better figure this out. He's got all the stuff. Go do it.
All right. I guess that's when you take your horse and you just run away. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I feel like they're gonna, he's gonna get caught if he tries that.
By who?
Smiles.
Nah.
He's like the best assassin.
Okay. The United States is huge.
Mm-hmm. And yet, Smiles had a net set up on the road in the exact spot where Boulder took Dixie after taking her from Briscoe. That's how good of an assassin Smiles is.
I thought you were talking about Miss Arnett. You said Annette, and then I was like, Annette? You mean like the secretary?
Yeah, that's Avnet.
Yeah. I have Arnett.
Do you?
No, it's probably a V. I don't know how to read handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Book. Google, please.
Oh, you know, I didn't mention in the recap, but one thing that's kind of funny is, like, when they get away from Smiles by catching the train,
who is, okay, Smiles is an assassin that John Bly hired to kill Dixie because Dixie has knows where this wax cylinder is that has this incriminating conversation between somebody that's going to run for president or is.
Yeah, former Civil War.
And then John Bly.
And John Bly. Yeah, because so one of the things that the robber baron mentions when he is playing the wax cylinder is that it's a new way to like record business dealings. So that you can prove that the voice, basically, like, you can prove that the business dealing actually happened.
I don't think that's true, because you can, like, just fake someone's voice.
Yeah, this is, like, again, to go back to Freaky Links, there's that episode with a guy who's, like, he always takes his inventory by, like, videotaping everything that he bought. And it's, like, that is the worst way to catalog an inventory of things, because it's like you have to watch the entire tape to find anything. That's a terrible way to catalog.
You know, but that idea probably came from somewhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That means that this probably someone heard about this or mm-hmm. Knew somebody that did that.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I say that, but then at the same time, that passage that I just read from the Campbell's autobiography, the thing I didn't read is he's talking about how, like, before he would do stunts, they would have a camera on him and be like, so how do you feel about your setup here? Like, yeah, it's pretty good. Like, no, do you feel comfortable and safe with the setup? I need you to state directly out loud on this camera that you're comfortable with it. If you're not, that's fine and we can adjust it, but you need to say out loud on camera.
Oh my gosh, that's intense.
Yeah, because
it's a liability.
Yeah,
thing.
It's a liability thing. Like, you need to be clear that, like,
is
they
that
are
how
not
going... they know that the horses and animals weren't harmed? Because they get the animals to be like, I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great experience. I loved acting on this film.
Yes, exactly.
Sincerely, Mr. Cockroach. I don't know. I guess it's for Joe's apartment. I don't know. Is that the name of that thing?
It sure is. Wow. A Joe's apartment call out. You haven't heard a lot of those in a while.
No one makes any of those. Welcome. Welcome to the podcast of nightmares.
Exactly. Anyway. I'm starting to talk about a different thing, and you were bringing up the wax cylinder, and I don't remember what you were saying about the wax cylinder.
Who cares anymore? I'm over it. Moving on.
Okay, so what I was saying was, like, yes, Dixie was the paramour of this general guy, and heard...
No, I think that she was Bly's paramour.
Mm-mm. No, she specifically said... I wrote down the actual quote. Where is
that
it?
Doesn't make any sense because she was Bly's paramour.
I know, but she was Hyde's paramour. He says she was Hyde's paramour.
Who's paramour? Okay, I would...
No,
Dixie... Okay,
she wasn't with Bly.
Dixie is going to double cross... Yes, she was.
No, she was with Big Smith. She was never with...
Okay.
As far as we know, she was never with Bly.
Okay. We know that Dixie is, but, like, I don't know. Where are these loyalties? Anywhere and anyone?
I think that's the thing. It used to be. Dixie has...
Settling down now. No, you're not.
No, I think...
It's a lie.
What I mean is, like, I think it used to be... She's had an alignment change.
What, she went to a chiropractor?
I'm just saying she's grown up some. She's changed her ways.
Yeah, she just hid away in the dive bar, and then
she was forced to by the U.S. Marshal people who were supposed to be protecting her. That's how they were protecting her, by hiding her in this bar.
She has zero willpower. She can, every time she sees Briscoe, they have to have a fling and some hay.
That's not a lack of willpower. Like, that's a decision. That's what she wants.
Okay, fine.
She is making a decision.
But I also don't trust her because I just think that she could be working for anyone to try to get one up on Briscoe.
She could be. I don't believe she is.
I have no reason not to believe she is. Even though she is, like, on a coin in Mexico.
Yeah. I'm saying once...
As, like, the Lady of Justice.
Yeah. When you're the Lady of Liberty for a revolution that's definitely the good guys, as it's framed in that episode... They're definitely the good guys.
Well, I did enjoy that there was a reference to Jalisco.
Yep.
And that they were going to go back there. Mm-hmm. Though I don't think the mission is in Mexico.
It's not. Yeah, the mission isn't in Mexico. She just wants to go back there because that's where she wants to go.
It's interesting because I almost felt like when she was at the mission calling that person, you know, mother, probably because, like, she's the mother.
Yeah.
I also felt like that person she felt like was her mother. Like, she felt like that was her home.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, she lived there for a long time. She was, like, training to become a nun.
I know.
Yeah.
But her heart wasn't in it.
Nope. Mm.
I don't know. Can you just leave like that? Can you? Yeah. Can you just? I don't know.
Sure.
You don't. All right.
Why not?
Why not?
I mean, the fact is, like, being a nun is a huge commitment. So if you aren't committed to it, it's not like they're gonna force you to stay. The last thing they want is somebody who isn't committed. They don't want somebody cheating on Jesus.
Okay, I'm making a lot of faces.
You're making a lot of faces.
And I just don't have anything to contribute. Because people make big commitments all the time quite easily.
Yeah.
Some you barely even have to think about.
Uh-huh.
And no one cares. No one's there. So I'm just saying you could probably sign on to be a nun and just be a nun and be miserable if you want.
I'm sure you could. What I'm saying is, like, if I feel like the one thing a nunnery doesn't want is somebody who's like, I don't feel like being a nun anymore. It's like, okay, yeah. So you're not, don't be.
All right. I don't know. I've been seeing Sister Act recently.
Have you? When was the last time you watched Sister Act?
I said, I haven't Sister Act recently.
I heard, I've been seeing Sister Act recently.
Yeah, I've been watching Sister Act and Sister Act 2. And is there a third one? I've been watching that, cranking that one up.
Yeah, I think there's just the two, but...
I write in the third one. And I recorded my own version of it, and I watch it on the daily. 2 hours of my day right there. My own version of Sister Act 3.
That would be...
We're bringing that giant toothbrush back.
That isn't even the right movie. You would know that.
All movies. It's right in all movies.
You would know that if you listen to TGI Date Night. Anyway, this is the thing I've been trying to say for like an hour and a half. Just a little thing. When they escape from Smiles and get onto the train the first time, they ride Comet to catch the train, but then Comet can't get up there, and Briscoe's like, Comet's like racing along next to the train, and Briscoe's like, what are you trying to do? And Dixie's like, I think he wants to come up here. And Briscoe's just like, how am I supposed to get him up here? And then Comet's all up.
He doesn't want to be left behind.
I know, but like, there's nothing they can do about that. He can't get him up on the train. But then he's all like bitter later. He's all like hurt because Briscoe didn't bring him with him.
Well, it doesn't matter because he has to be left out there because Lord Bowler finds him.
Mm-hmm. Also, another good thing with a callback, because when...
Green apples.
Yeah, because when Breakstone first hires him, we see Bowler eating a green apple.
Love it. Love to see it. Love to see a Bowler eating an apple.
Yeah. Because not just eating an apple, eating a green apple, because we know from the pilot that Comet likes green apples. In fact, because it doesn't... isn't it... Who is it that tries Socrates tries to give him a red apple.
Yeah, and Socrates goes there, Lord Bowler's actually in there pretending to be the voice of Comet.
Right. So I appreciate that not only do we see...
shenanigans have been pulled.
Yeah. Not only did we see that Bowler had a green apple earlier... But he then manages to get Comet to give him a ride because he has a green apple later.
It's a green one. Delicious green apple.
Yeah. I just appreciate that that all comes together. It's a nice little thread throughout all of that.
Mm-hmm. Love a callback.
Do love a callback. Oh, I really another thing I liked when Breakstone, when talking with Breakstone, when is later when he's talking to Socrates and he says that he sent Lord Buller after Dixie, and Socrates is like, "You must be joking," and he's like, "I never joke, and I only smile occasionally."
Oh yeah, that was very strange. Yeah, this is Fox humor, I think. Is it not? It seems like a Simpsons joke.
It does. It does. I just really like it.
I actually saw this tweet, or I saw a screenshot of a tweet of someone talking about like watching The Simpsons probably like for the first time or something, and being like, oh, this is where you get your jokes. This is like, this explains so much. And I'm like, yeah, like a lot of, you know, a lot of people grew up with The Simpsons and like very much what you watch like influences your sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
So many people make jokes like The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. We probably do, and I don't even know it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure my comedy's been influenced by The Simpsons, 100%. Yes.
I don't know how we could not be. And also, like, things like SNL and things like that.
Oh,
and
totally.
It's kind of fascinating.
It is. I agree.
Anyways, back to Briscoe here.
Oh, okay. Here's another thing I really like is, like, because, you know, Briscoe's trying to, like, bring Dixie back because, you know, believes in a sense of justice and whatever. And, like, Buller's trying
to, like, so that she does her, like, job as the witness.
Right, yeah. And like, Buller's trying to bring her back because he's been hired by Breakstone and
get another $1 million.
Yeah. And there's this scene that I really like when they're like both kind of like arguing like because they keep fighting about like
who?
Briscoe and Buller keep fighting about who's gonna bring Dixie back, and I like this thing where Dixie's just like, once again you two are fighting because you're both trying to do the same thing for different reasons, like you should just be working together. And Bowler's like, I work alone. And Briscoe's like, me too. And she's like, great. So it's settled. Like, that's great. Like, that is a good, like, that's a good exchange. I really enjoy that a lot. Where it's just sort of like, you dummies. Like, you boys. Just work together.
Just kiss already.
Seriously. Like, that, I definitely thought that too. Where I was just like, this feels like just being like, just kiss. Like, you're just. You clearly just want a kiss, so just do it.
Just do it. Just kiss. Since we're in the church part, I definitely love that part where they get there and are just like, all the nuns are praying, and then they have to like go and look at everyone because it's a smile, right? Smiles.
So yeah, one of Smiles is like henchman is like
Mr. Smile.
Sees Dixie dressed as a nun, and Dixie like runs off, and then they find just a bunch of like nuns and like all praying together. Yeah, so
but this is so shocking. When they turn everyone around, I would just be so upset if I was them.
Well, yeah, except
and, like, you can't just go in and start spinning people all around. Can you imagine if you're like at wherever you are and people just turn you around to look at your face and like punch you in the face?
Yeah, see, and they do. Except it's Buller. Yeah.
I know. He makes a great nun.
Yes. Except, so I think the thing is with that is that like they know this is what's happening. They're not praying, they are hiding them. So
okay.
They're expecting.
Why are nuns always hiding people and part of shenanigans?
This is such an Assassin's Creed thing, too.
Assassin's Creed 2?
I mean, yeah, probably.
Nuns on the run. bad habit. In the Habit?
Yeah, Assassin's Creed 2, Back in the Habit, exactly. No, because, like, that was absolutely a thing. There were these groups of, like, nuns that would walk around in, like, one of the early Assassin's Creed games praying. Yeah, yeah. And because you were also wearing a white robe thing, you could hide.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you would hide in that group.
Getting into the middle of the group and doing a prayer thing. And it would, like, it was part of the game. Where so I was just like, oh, they're doing an Assassin's Creed.
Oh, this could mean such a Handmaid's Tale vibe.
Oh, mm-hmm. Also that. Yeah. Anyway, I did really like the part where when they're finally, like, cornered and they're going for it and they get, well, they're finally going for the cylinder and they get cornered by Smiles and the
mother... like, with the cuckoo cock?
No. In the mission.
Oh, okay.
Like, right
in
the
mission.
End, they've managed to take out all of the henchmen, but Smiles is still there and manages to corner them. And then the Mother Superior hits them with the pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, like, starts praying, like, forgive me, Father, but I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's fun. I enjoy it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I love, I love a scene with a nun, like, hitting a guy, like, in a just way. Not the things where it's, like, she, like, abusing a student kind of thing in a Catholic school.
Well,
like, I don't want that. But, like, I love something like this where it's just sort of like, oh, it turns out it feels good to hit a guy.
It's a badman.
He's a badman. Yeah, he's a badman. Like, I'm saying,
and
like,
I feel like nuns are the ultimate. They're supposed to be like the good.
Yeah,
the good. So like you, but they also don't do the. They don't do the hitting.
Yeah, you don't do a hit when you're a nun.
You don't do a hit. So when they do a hit, it's great.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, I just enjoyed that scene. I enjoyed the whole thing. Oh, I guess we should give Dixie's backstory thing.
Yeah.
Dixie's wild backstory, because this is the reason she's going on this mission. Okay.
So her parents were killed, right?
Yeah, I think it's killed. I'm not entirely sure if they were killed by, she was killed by Cherokee or just taken by Cherokee after they were killed. Parents were killed.
I thought she was, like, found by them, raised.
Right. But then she said she was rescued by Mennonites, which makes me think she was taken by the Cherokee
that
killed her.
But she doesn't stay with the Mennonites.
Well, she doesn't stay with the Mennonites because they all died of yellow fever.
Oh.
So, parents were settlers, were killed, Cherokee raised her, Mennonites rescued her, the Mennonites all died of yellow fever, so then she went to this mission, trained as a nun for 15 years, but her heart wasn't in the work.
How old is Dixie?
Yes. I don't know. An amount of years. Not really clear. I feel... Yeah, it's just...
Over 25.
Well, yes.
Probably 30.
Probably? I mean, that's the thing. She's had a life, right? Like, she's been with Big Smith for a while.
Well, how did she end up with Bly? How did she end up with Bly's gang running with them and that whole...
I don't know. Like, we don't...
And is there any reason to believe anything Dixie says? I don't know why she would be lying about this, because they clearly know her.
That's the thing. It's like, regardless of whether you would inherently trust Dixie's backstory, this mission, the Mother Superior of this mission bashes a dude's head in with a frying pan to protect her.
Yes.
There's a connection here. They know her.
I know, it seems that I'm really hating on Dixie, and asking all the questions.
She
double crossed Briscoe before, and also I like Annie.
She?
Yeah, because she was sleeping with him for information in the pilot.
She was, but she never actually double crosses him. She's using him, but she never reveals who he is. He never has any negative thing happen to him because she's using him. She's using him for her gain, but never his, like, loss.
he has always lost by being around Dixie because he has to do, like, all of these incredible feats to save her.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. And also, she had the cylinder before. So why does it matter now? Why is it just coming to light now?
No, she's... I think that's the thing. She's...
So this is recent?
This is recent. I think... So one of the things Briscoe says in the train...
She's already become a coin and left that guy, yes, and now is with... I'm become the paramour of somebody
we
that...
We should be watching The Adventures of Dixie Cousins. As much as I love this show, The Adventures of Dixie Cousins would be, like, 10 times as wild.
It would. It has to be, because Dixie is just, like, on the move.
Yeah.
On the move.
Yes. Yes.
Like, she has a private jet.
She probably invented one with Wickwire.
Probably.
I'm saying, yeah, like, that... The Adventures of Dixie Cousins is the more interesting show that we never got to see.
All right.
Because we were watching The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
It's all a distraction.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. Briscoe's going to go settle down with Annie.
So, yeah. So, one of the things Briscoe brings up in the train scene is... Because, like, he rescues Dixie and they escape from Smiles and they end up on the train and there's... Like, a whole conversation where Briscoe's being a little bit of a baby, and he's like, because he's a little, he's like, why do you keep ending up with the wrong men?
Oh, like when they're smooching in the hay?
But before the smooching, when he, but
this
that
is so
scene.
Early in the episode, we've right. already talked about things that have happened.
Right, that's why we give a recap, so we can jump around all right. we want. One of the when he's like still kind of like mad at her and isn't really like trying to like not be very affectionate, he's like, why do you keep ending up with the wrong men? And I think this guy, the Warrington Hyde, mm-hmm. he's talking about him
mm-hmm.
because she's been with him since the last time he saw mm-hmm. her, and her thing is like, I don't really have a choice when the right man keeps leaving. How do I end up with, why do I end up with the wrong men? Because I found the right man and he doesn't want to stick around.
No, that's BS.
I'm saying, I agree, but that's her feeling, is she's
so then you just don't go out with anyone else.
That's not who Dixie is. She likes being with men.
Okay, that's fine. But then maybe stop being hanging around criminals so much. And she's going to be like, well, criminals just like me.
Yeah.
Well, Dix, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not ready for a commitment.
Here's the thing. If you ask, like, if you take out what we know is actually the driving point of the plot of this episode,
mm-hmm.
Dixie dated a famous Civil War general who's about to become the president.
Yeah, but...
That's not the wrong man. Until you find out he's the wrong man.
I feel like a lot of people that have run for president okay. are sometimes the wrong man.
Sure. I'm saying, not only to her view, that he isn't obviously the wrong man. In fact, when
the
she
right
finds
man
out,
is like a humble farmer,
and it's only when she finds out that he was allied with Bly,
Dixie
she turns
with
him
Annie,
in.
Dixie
yes.
with Annie.
Yes, yes, agreed. I'm just saying, the Dixie from the pilot stays with Big Smith with plans to take over Bly's gang. Dixie now finds out that somebody allied with Bly and wants to turn him into the government. Dixie has changed.
No, but she doesn't want to be the... She doesn't witness it. She doesn't want to be on the stand.
That's mostly because she doesn't want to die trying to do it.
Well...
She wants the evidence.
Then why does she keep ending up with the wrong man?
She's not I'm saying...
Because there is no right man, because all men suck.
Well, there's that too. Yes, agreed. I'm just saying, Dixie's aim aiming higher than she used to. She just missed.
Well, as long as she doesn't go, I was talking tease. Okay, let's talk about that situation.
Yes, let's
talk about that.
Yeah.
Because clearly she's very shy.
Miss Avnet?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly,
yeah.
And then suddenly she's like, oh, sign all these papers with my bosom hanging out. Oh, look at this outfit that's totally different than I've been wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Socrates, now I must have you right now. Even though this is so totally outlandish behavior for like 1895 or whatever.
Yeah. But as we've said, you can't accept, you can't have a problem.
No, you can't. Like, you can't, because the orb.
There's an orb.
This is like, this is like 1995.
Exactly.
It's like, I'm Rachel, and I'm going to have you right here on this desk.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this.
Palo.
Wow. Yeah, this is a pretty extreme scene, I feel like, for 1893. Like, yeah. I don't.
Also, the boss walking in on them, and it was just like, oh, no problem, Socrates. Back at it, old chap. What's that? What's that all about?
It's 1893.
1893, he would be in there with, like, a shotgun and a broom or something.
No, 1893, the guy's like, oh, you're sleeping with the secretary? Oh, well, let me just step out of the room and give you some space. As opposed to being like, that's absolutely inappropriate. We need to bring you to HR.
There was no HR.
Yeah, there.
That's Harry's room.
Exactly. Yeah, no, this 100%, I think, in 1893, if the boss finds out you're sleeping with the secretary, he's like,
yeah, but the secretary's nice. Also, like, doing...
Nice.
I was going to say doing a double skate, and I don't know what that means, but I'm just going to go with it.
She is absolutely doing a double skate, but the boss doesn't know that, so...
Are you sure the boss doesn't know it's a double skate?
I mean, he's a robber baron. He's doing his own fair share of double skates, but... I don't think he knows Miss Avnet's doing a double skate, because she's gonna, her actions are gonna result in the Westerfield Club getting exploded. I don't think he's in favor.
How much is she getting paid for that?
Probably a pretty decent amount.
But probably nothing, because they're gonna throw her away, because she's a woman in 1893.
Well, sure, but there's probably, she's expecting a payday for being involved in all of this.
You need a lot of money to just, like, go around just sleeping with Socrates.
I'm gonna say, in this world we're seeing, there's a lot of women getting paid to sleep with men they wouldn't sleep with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this isn't very far outside the realm of the norm. Here?
I guess that is true. That's true. That's true.
Not that that's outside the realm of the norm today either, but
that's true. Also true. I don't know. It's nothing against Socrates. It's just like there's nothing.
Yep.
Nothing happened. Nothing changes in the relationship when she finally just is like escalates it to.
Yeah.
Up to 11. And that's fine. And that's fine.
Yeah. Some ladies like nerds.
What?
Some ladies like nerds.
Stop calling me out. All right. So let's talk about the cuckoo clock bomb.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about this cuckoo clock bomb. This is incredible. What a ridiculous prop. And I tip my hat to the...
Is it a bowler?
No, it is a gigantic, like, nacho hat. Like one of those hats full of nacho sauce.
Oh, okay.
And I tip the hat and a little spill of some nacho sauce to the prop designer who took a full size cuckoo clock and wrapped it in dynamite. It's a just completely surrounded in dynamite. What, like, whoever came up with this, just a stroke of genius. I salute you. I tip my nacho hat to you. Brilliant. Like, this is amazing. Because, oh my god, yeah, because Smiles takes, like, a match and sticks it to the beak of the cuckoo bird, pushes it back in, sets the timer to, like, 5 minutes to the hour, and locks it in the safe so that in 5 minutes it will... The cuckoo bird will come out, striking the match, lighting the fuse, and setting off the bomb. This is a beautiful bomb of, like, just incredible cartoonish proportions. I love everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, you said you... Let's talk about it, and then I just waxed
poetic. No, we talked about it. That's all I wanted. I wanted that, like, poetry. Provided. Talked about.
Oh, just, it's beautiful. It's...
Now we know why there's only that one shot of the Westerfield Club.
Yep. Yeah, it gets blown up. Completely just fireball. We have been seeing the same shot for so long. I feel like this is the first episode we saw that shot at night. Like, those two men who have been walking across that courtyard mm-hmm. every episode
mm-hmm. finally, well, they work there.
Finally make it to the gate at night. Like, they've been walking towards the mm-hmm. gate during the day for weeks, mm-hmm. months at this point,
mm-hmm.
and they finally got there at night,
mm-hmm.
right before Smiles shows up to blow the entire thing.
They got out just in time.
Just, yeah, it's
by Jove, it's that a cuckoo clock bomb?
But I swear it's those same two men at the start of the scene.
Oh yeah, it is. It definitely is.
We've been seeing those two men for 11 episodes, and we finally see them leave. We've seen them
approach. Was Hyde. That was Warrington Hyde and the other one.
Probably, yeah. We've been seeing them approach that gate every episode. Yeah, what?
Crow. Before it became a dog.
What?
That's one of the men.
Oh, okay.
Not really.
No, I assume you're right.
Okay, do we want to talk about Dixie and Briscoe going on the date and like the flowers?
I feel like we've addressed a lot not being into them dating.
Yeah, too much.
But we
too
haven't
much.
Actually talked about the romantic stuff between them that actually happened.
Yeah, let's talk about that gross stuff. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I feel, the most important thing in this episode, I think, is not the chases and the shooting and the kidnapping and the trains.
Cuckoo
and
clocks.
Cuckoo clock bomb and all that. It's that Dixie wants to be with Briscoe.
Yeah, so they can be disco.
Yes, I realized you said that earlier, and I didn't catch that. I thought you know what, you said that earlier as, like, it was Briscoe's, like, evil.
Yeah, I did say
thing,
that.
But now I realize, like, that's also their mm-hmm. their mm-hmm. ship name.
That's their ship name.
Dixie wants a disco forever. She's got disco fever.
She does have disco fever. And I love the scene with the flowers and the bowler showing up to do the fast travel in Saint Denis.
Right.
And then I thought Dixie was not going to show up.
Yeah, so did Briscoe. Yeah, but because you just brought it up, I do want to talk about that bit first. Because,
okay.
Like, it's the final scene. Briscoe's waiting to have a date he's like outside the Horseshoe Club because, you know, Dixie's back there now and got some flowers, clearly waiting to have a date with Dixie. And then Bowler shows up and wants to discuss, like, I want to talk about us. Which is exactly what Dixie was trying mm-hmm. to do. And I love Briscoe just being like, not you two. Like, it's just, can't, I not right now. Like, please. Please, no. But I really like that as a juxtaposition. Like,
you can't have your relationship meetings both on the same night.
Yeah.
Can have to get your Google calendars in check. Gosh.
Seriously. It's just like, yeah, I really like him, like, but I like that because, like, they do need to have that conversation.
They do!
Like, now that Dixie's made it clear, like, has called them out for the sexual tension between them
mm-hmm.
and been like, you need to sort your stuff out
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
figure out what's going on between you two
mm-hmm.
and just kiss already.
Yep.
I don't, you know, I have no idea how many people are now over an hour into this episode and don't know whether or not Dixie actually said just kiss already, and I'm not going to say. So, so I just really like this thing of be like, we need to talk about us. And just like, no, I just, please no, not right now. Like,
I really wanted Dixie not to show up.
I know. We know you do.
I know, but I did like that Comet got to eat the flowers.
Yes. Yeah, because Briscoe had given up and was just like, she's not coming, and goes to feeds the flowers to Comet. Yeah. She's like,
and then she shows up and she's like, is that me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which
some stems. Nice stems. See, that's what Dixie could have said.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Could have.
Last moment there.
And the thing is, like, this is a really interesting point, I think, is when Briscoe's like, I thought you changed your mind. And she's like, I did. And then I changed it back. And it's like, okay. So even she's not, like, 100% here.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's, like, she's still Dixie.
No, she's one horseshoe in and one horseshoe out.
Yeah, because like, I mean, and it makes sense, like, because Briscoe even said, like, he's not sure. He's like, I'm probably not a good person to be with. I'm a lawman.
A person that is chasing down actively a gang of criminals.
Yeah, murderers.
And who's almost gotten killed multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not going to be a great situation. And
that is not a good current partner.
Yeah.
And they might not be there for you later. But, like, yeah. Love is love, and they're right. Going for it. They're going for it. They're mm-hmm. doing the big smooches in the alley.
Yeah.
And on the train, and on the rack, and on yeah. the TJ Maxx, and wherever.
Right. Though you say that, I don't know if I'd call these big smooches. Last week, those are some big smooches.
They had some big smooches.
You know what gets, you know what it is for me with these is like, they take a long time.
It takes a long time to be lustful.
Not this, not like
she's
this.
Coquettish and teasy.
She's not though. That's literally her entire thing is to not be that. And I think that's what gets me about the romance here. Like that's the thing that
like the work up to kiss that they're like.
It takes so long in a way that I'm like, this is not how people
kiss.
Because
the music has to swell before the kiss.
I know. And that's what bothers me about it is like, that doesn't feel real. When Briscoe, that's what I was saying.
When
like,
Briscoe and Bowler kiss, it's not like that.
I know. Exactly. No, when Briscoe and Annie kissed, it was just sort of like, yeah, that's how people kiss. And when there's meant to be this big dramatic buildup to Briscoe and Dixie kissing, and it just feels like they're hesitant.
Yeah, maybe these people don't like each other.
I don't know. Like maybe I, it just
they're hesitant. They're hesitantly into each other.
I think it's meant to seem cinematically romantic, and it just feels hesitant.
Yeah, hesitance is cinematically romantic.
Yeah, but I think that's why I'm not like...
Oh, yeah, because they're playing hard to get, which is not romantic, it turns out. Just being honest about your feelings. And
I don't know if it's even hard to get. It's just like, it's taken forever. It's just like, you're not kissing like people kiss.
Kiss forever. Gosh. Kiss forever like real people.
Yeah, that's all. That's my entire issue with it, is the kissing is weird.
Okay, we just hated on Briscoe Dixie for like 3 hours. Anything else?
Yeah, but that's the thing. We just hated on Briscoe Dixie as a relationship for so long, and it occurred to me, like, I don't have a problem with them together. I think I just don't like the 7 seconds between them deciding to kiss and them kissing. Like, I just don't want to watch that. I think that's literally the entire issue.
Okay, well, just fast forward those parts. You don't like the sexual tension and buildup.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
No, that's not even what it is.
I know. It's because they don't seem good together. They're both too big. They're both number ones. They're both lead singers in the band. And there's like a competition for who's like first. And it's just not going to go well. It's going to be like Nolan and Liam all over again.
Mm-hmm.
We can't handle this kind of drama.
Mm-hmm.
Until next week, when who knows who the heroine of the week will be, which is, I'm referencing what.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know,
even specifically called that out.
Yeah, where Bruce Campbell was like, yeah.
Yeah. I will say, the thing that's really interesting, though, is like when they're one of their conversations, when Briscoe specifically says that, like, it's not probably good to be married to a lawman.
Yes.
And then Dixie says, like, you know, our issue is timing.
Yes.
They have another one of those weird slow kisses. But then when it pulls away.
Yeah.
They also just have like a tender hug.
Yeah.
In a way that's like, oh, that's not, you know, your cinematic lustful kiss. That's like two people just like having a tender moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that feels real. That's the most real moment between them.
The orb, Dave. The orb. The orb makes it not real.
I know, I'm saying this hug feels real.
The hug can feel real, but I'm just saying we can't analyze everything about feeling real because the orb. The orb.
The orb isn't what makes their kisses feel awkward.
Well, you know what it probably is? It's probably the ghost of Adam.
The ghost of Adam?
From Freaky Links.
Oh.
Adam Barnes.
I thought you meant like...
is standing in between Briscoe County and Dixie and it's like, you cannot kiss.
I thought you were going to say like, every time Briscoe goes to kiss Dixie, he can see his dad like behind her. Just like, ah, oh, dad, why do you gotta make this weird every time? Like,
good one, Brisk! She's a hot potato!
Sometimes people can hear me do this and just roars at. He's like, Dad, that's so weird. Like, I'm trying to have a moment here. Just.
Yes, Dad, just all always around.
Yeah. Only when he's having tender moments with Dixie.
It's like that's the ghost of Bruce Springsteen and High Fidelity. It's not a ghost, I guess. It's just like a presence.
It's not really a ghost, what with Bruce Springsteen still being alive.
I know, but like, he's there, but not. He's metaphorically
yes.
there.
Yes, yes. All right. I don't know if I have anything else to say.
I don't have anything else to say about how much I hate Dixie Cousins, so I'm out.
You keep saying that and then being like, I don't hate Dixie Cousins.
But I do, but I don't.
You hate disco.
I love disco. What are you talking about?
I know, but you're the one that named their
I don't know what disco that is.
I don't know.
You can cut it out.
Nope.
Oh.
Oh. We didn't really, okay, I mentioned it briefly, but one last thing that we didn't really talk about was when yeah, Briscoe's, like, tied to the rails, and then the train, and then they start the train, and it starts pulling. So the train's moving forward, and starts stretching him, and pulling him, and everything. And, like,
he sounds like you make it sound like Stretch Armstrong, like, his...
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying, it starts pulling... his arms, and
it's not Laffy Taffy.
He might be, considering how long the train is moving forward.
Okay, got a long face, Briscoe.
I'm just saying, like, this scene goes for a while.
I know, this is like what happens before every disco kiss.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, just imagine Briscoe being stretched out for a little bit, and then they kiss.
Yeah.
It's that agony. It's the agony. Every time before they kiss, it's like Briscoe remembers what it's like to be ultra stretched out.
I'm just saying, the amount of time between when the rope is completely taut and he's in the air, and when Dixie cuts the rope, Briscoe's arms would have been ripped off. Like, there's no way Briscoe isn't dead. In this scene.
Look, I'm not a Mythbuster, but I'm sure it takes a certain amount of force, and I don't want to talk about it or even think about it. And this is, we were on the fringe.
I know.
We are on the fringe.
The train has enough force that Briscoe's arms would have been long ripped off.
Should have Skywalkered him apart.
Exactly. Yes.
Very convoluted.
Yes.
Reference.
But yes.
Mm-hmm. A double Skywalker. Spoilers.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all. I just want to that one bit. Like, definitely Briscoe could not have survived that scene. Well, for the amount of time that it took.
Don't forget to look for your overextended, stretched out arms.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you luck on your journey.
All right. And with that bit of advice, until next week, this has been A Different Direction. This is TGIF Arcade saying, I'll be waiting for you, Brisk. A Different Direction is a TGIF Arcade production. You can contact the podcast at diffdirectionpod on Twitter or email us at differentdirection@tgifarcade.com. You can also find information about everything that TGIF Arcade produces by following us at TGIF Arcade on Twitter. Thanks for listening.